Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. Each weekday morning here on the Genesis Communication Network, I strive to expose the beguiling and the destructive myths which are associated with religion and with politics, with patriotism, and in the media, with military and economic schemes. If you listen, your eyes may be opened and you may ultimately change your mind towards these things. Instead of merely presenting the news, my mission is to help you understand what is occurring behind the headlines, all while predicting how the events that are discussed will shape our world. Now, typically, we cover the news in the first hour, and we turn to Yah's testimony in the second. On Fridays, we typically invert that order so that we can have IQ al-Rasuli share his wisdom regarding Islam with us at a time that is more conducive to his schedule. That's what we'll be doing today. So this morning, during the first hour, we're going to engage God on his terms by way of his always dependable Torah teaching, continuing our study of the creation account so that we understand who God is, what he is offering to us, and how we can engage in a relationship with him, as well as how to properly understand what he said in the beginning of Bereshith, which is the first book of the Torah. Our phone number, if you'd like to question, criticize, or affirm anything I or during our second hour, IQ al-Rasuli has to say, is 877-300-7645. Turning now to the discussion we were in the midst of yesterday, we were talking about trying to calibrate, finding ways, and we found three that we could use to calibrate a clock that would be in the proximity of the Big Bang, of the creation of the universe, with one here on Earth today, so that when we consider the testimony of someone who was part and parcel of creation, and they provide a timeline for creation, we can calibrate that timeline with our own looking back, realizing that time does not flow at the same rate everywhere, that in proximity of great velocity or mass or energy, time flows much slower than it does elsewhere. And we went through examples yesterday of light being emitted from our sun, that clock being slower by a number of seconds each year, as well as having to adjust our GPS satellites because they're traveling at much faster speeds than are the clocks in the cars and airplanes and boats that use them. So we know this for certain, and what we've talked about yesterday was the realization that we have a timepiece that is available to us ubiquitously throughout the universe that tells us the rate that time flowed in the aftermath of the Big Bang, about 300,000 years after the Big Bang. And that's the cosmic background microwave radiation, which we know the wavelength has been stretched by 10 to the 12th power over what it is today. And by comparing that and the other three calculated means that we have to ascertain the difference in a time clock so as to calibrate the timing that Yahweh discusses in his Torah regarding the epochs of creation with our way of reckoning time now here on Earth, we came to realize that 0.9 times 10 to the 12th days to us would equate to one day in the presence of creation itself. And we spent considerable time analyzing light as the medium of conveying the relative nature of time. So now before we examine all of these calculations, calibrating Genesis time to our own to ascertain how God and man can both be accurate and differ relative to how long it took to create the universe, Let's take a moment to explore some of the cosmological assumptions which have led us to our current state of awareness. To begin, cosmologists contend that a concentration of energy at the initiation of the universe produced electromagnetic waves, or photons, that were forged as the explosion cooled sufficiently to permit matter to form. When temperatures are too high, you have nothing but energy and no matter. And so matter requires a cooling to acquiesce, to assimilate into organized energy, if you will. Persisting to this day, the photons have traveled out in all directions. The thermal soup of quarks, electrons, and photons decreased in temperature rapidly, falling from 10 to the 13th power degrees Kelvin to 1 billion degrees after the first few minutes, a temperature that is still almost 70 times hotter than in the core of the sun. 300,000 years later, as the universal energy and density dispersed and dissipated, atoms began to coalesce into gas clouds, which later evolved into stars. Moving forward to today, we find that the black body temperature of space has now fallen to 2.73 degrees Kelvin, hovering ever so slightly above what we call absolute zero. This temperature is the remnant of the primordial fireball that is discernible through the stretching of the electromagnetic wavelengths. Visible light lies in the center of the nearly infinite range of electromagnetic waves, also known as traveling packets of energy. This physical phenomenon occurs when an electric field, couples with a perpendicular magnetic field. Lengths and frequencies of photon energy vary, but not speeds, at least in a vacuum. All forms of radiant energy, gamma rays, X-rays, ultraviolet, visible light, infrared, microwave, and radio waves, going from the smallest to the longest, are manifestations of the same thing, and they all travel at the same speed, a pace so extreme that from their perspective, time slows to the point that it no longer moves and simply exists. The wavelength of electromagnetic radiation determines whether it falls within our range of vision. We see wavelengths of approximately 0.00007 centimeters as red and 0.00004 centimeters as violet at the other extreme of the visible spectrum. By contrast, a microwave produces waves that are 10 centimeters long, while gamma rays from radioactive materials can be as short as 0.00000001 centimeter. The shorter the wavelength, the higher the wave frequency and energy. A gamma ray photon, for example, packs billions of times more energy than an infrared photon. This is important because the energy we measure as CMB, cosmic microwave background radiation, was emitted as gamma rays, which have a wavelength of 10 to the minus 11th power centimeters, but are now elongated microwaves, which are 10 centimeters long, indicating that they have stretched a million fold, confirming once again our 10 to the 12th power exponential that is the essential aspect of all of this when trying to calibrate clocks. Now, as an interesting aside, we can only feel infrared light and see visible light. And I believe that our senses one day will be more receptive in our eternal state. We may be able to see and feel things that currently lay way beyond our current limitations. What I'm hinting at here is I think that the universe may be comprised of seven dimensions, not the four we are vaguely familiar with today. And I say vaguely because most of us are challenged to understand time as a dimension. And I think that when we are more capable, when we are empowered, enriched by Yahweh, as he promises as benefits of his covenant, that we will see how dark matter and dark energy are involved, are essential components, if you will, of these dimensions, just as time is an essential component of these dimensions. Now, once we recognize that the CMB is little more than a uniform sea of photons left over from the hot early phase of the universe immediately after quark confinement, we are confronted with a singular plausible explanation for having this uniform cosmic microwave background radiation exist throughout the universe with such a precise spectrum. It had to be generated at a time when the cosmos was much hotter and much denser than it is now. Hence, the CMB spectrum is essentially incontrovertible evidence, that the universe experienced a hot Big Bang stage. That's not to say that we understand the initial instant of creation, just that we know the universe used to be vastly more energy intense and massively dense, and that it expanded, becoming less dense and cooling ever since. It is therefore certain that the early universe was very hot. And by the way, what I just shared with you, while that will sound like it is an affirmation of science, it is actually a contradiction of science prior to 60 years ago. If you go back 60 years ago, most scientists would have said that the notion that the universe had a beginning was repugnant to them. And it was only after Hubble published and thought about the redshift, which is now, by the way, being called into question, that scientists accepted what they once said was not true, that the universe was, in fact, created. So we're going to return to our study of what we can know about the universe's gestation and what we can use from it to calibrate the Creator's clock to our own. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We know for absolute certain that the early universe was very hot. The temperature was approximately 4 times 10 to the 72nd power ergs. An erg is a unit of energy equivalent to 10 to the minus 7th joules, the energy required to exert a force of 1 newton, a distance of 1 meter. This means that creation was 10 to the 12 times hotter than the universe is today on average. There is so much energy, at least at that time, around, that scientists speculate that pairs of particles and antiparticles were constantly being created and annihilated. This annihilation was translated into packets of light known as photons. But as the universe expanded and the temperature fell, particles and antiparticles, quarks and the like, annihilated each other for the last time. And energies became low enough that they couldn't be recreated again. For reasons still not understood today, the early cosmos had about one part in a billion more particles than antiparticles. So when all of the antiparticles had annihilated their counterparts, that left about a billion photons for every particle of matter. And that's the way the universe exists today, with light remaining dominant. Now that we have some familiarity with the elements which comprise the coefficient of the variance between our clock and the Creator's, let's examine how long this timepiece has been running. Here, Hubble's law has great significance because it quantifies the expansion of the universe and thus can be used to calculate its age. The time elapsed since the Big Bang is a function of the present value of Hubble's constant and its rate of change. Astronomers have determined the approximate rate of expansion, but no one has yet been able to measure the second value precisely. Still, one can estimate rate of change within the constant of the universe's, or the context, I should say, of the universe's average density. Since gravity exerts a force which opposes expansion, galaxies should be moving apart more slowly now than they did in the past. The rate of change in expansion is therefore related to the gravitational pull of the universe as a result of its average density. If that density, or if the density of that variable is determined in and around galaxies, then we can deduce that the average universe, or the age of the universe, based upon the nature of galaxies, is somewhere between 12 and 18 billion years, a range which allows for the uncertainty in the rate of expansion. Also, we have some serious concerns about redshift that have come to light in the last 5 to 10 years, not well publicized, but something we'll consider next week in our news hour of the program. But the more that we kind of grasp the nature of redshift, the more one would deduce that the universe is somewhere around 15 or 16 billion years old. This notion that, you know, we can tell with great precision that the universe is 13.772 billion years old based upon the calculations of information deduced from a single satellite is in conflict with all of the other sources of information to calculate the time that our universal clock has been running. But 12 to 18 billion years with a likelihood of a time between 15 and 16 billion years would be the result of using principally redshift. Now, that satellite that I was referring to is the Wilkinson Microwave Anisotropy Probe. It's recently provided that estimate of 13.772 billion years. Now, that is a bit suspicious for two reasons. First, the density of the universe isn't remotely equivalent to the visible material in and around galaxies. Along these lines, the very same satellite confirmed that 96% of the energy and matter in the cosmos is unknown to us, thereby undermining the one assumption that is absolutely essential to its equation producing a viable, verifiable, accurate result. The gravitational influence of dark matter and the repulsive aspect of dark energy has dramatic consequences for all aspects of fundamental physics. So it should have moved the age estimate to one outside of that anticipated by Hubble, which was 12 to 18 billion years. Further, the universe is filled with a uniform sea of quantum zero-point energy, or a condensate of new particles that have a mass which is 10 to the minus 39 times smaller than that of an electron. These particles, if they are indeed particles, should not be ignored either. We'll return in a moment. To Shattering Myths. You know, just as a quick break here from the science, I don't want this program to sound like we're going to class here. The realization is that so long as we are willing to exercise good judgment, by being observant and considering information that increases our knowledge, doing so will lead to understanding. And since it was inspired by the Creator, since he proved that the Torah was inspired by him, there is no better place where understanding, or no other place, I should say, where understanding is more important than the Torah's testimony, which is what we are in the process of evaluating. We're trying to correlate our way of reckoning time to the way that time is presented in the beginning of the Torah, to see if, in fact, 6 days from the perspective of the Creator is equivalent to the billions of years that it has taken to for the universe to get to the place that we are today. And so that is why we are devoting this time. If by doing so we come to better understand the instructions and guidance that Yahweh provided in his Torah teaching, then we're in a much better position to respond to what he is offering. And so, should the this devotion to scientific presentation seem a bit wearisome, we're building a foundation for understanding. There is a reason for doing so. And speaking of reasons, another reason for skepticism that the cosmos is not 13.7 billion years old, or is actually older than that, but is not precisely that and no older, is that the cosmos cannot be younger than the material from which it is comprised. And there is considerable evidence that many stars, even relatively close ones, are considerably older than the 13.77 billion years that this probe has provided us with as a conclusion. So many stars, including those in close proximity to our sun, are considered to be more than 15 billion years old. Now, that's part of the cosmology now that is dismissed only because it is in conflict with the most cherished, newest conclusion. Now, apart from the Hubble redshift expansion model and the Wilkinson CMB estimates, there are several other ways to evaluate the universe's age. For example, the rate of cooling of white dwarf stars indicates that the oldest stars in the Milky Way, which is the galaxy that our solar system resides in, are about 9 billion years old. The stars in the halo of the Milky Way are somewhat older, about 15 billion years old, a value derived from the rate of nuclear fuel consumption in their cores. Additionally, the ages of the oldest known chemical compounds in the cosmos are also about 15 billion years old, according to radioactive dating techniques. Workers in laboratories have derived these age estimates from atomic and nuclear physics. It is noteworthy that their results agree with the age astronomers have derived by measuring cosmic expansion. So prior to the microwave background radiation numbers and the precise calculation that was derived from them of 13.772 billion years old, virtually every aspect of astronomy and physics had determined that the universe was in fact between 15 and 16 billion years old. And now come to find out that quite recently it has been determined that there is cosmic microwave background radiation that shows an age of the universe preceding the Big Bang. And that being the case, that's a story that we will consider, the evidence of it, because it became news here recently. We'll consider that next week in our morning discussion. But keep in mind that there are many, many reasons to doubt the 13.77 being specific. I think the best we can say at this point is that our best guesses are somewhere between 13 and 16 billion years, and we really don't know with any precision. So now that we have evaluated some of the pieces to our puzzle, God's Big Bang testimony, man's Big Bang theory, the age of the universe, the relative nature of time, the role of photon energy in our genesis, it's time to put it all together. The first conclusion should now be obvious. This discussion on the initiation of time, the concentration of energy, the inflationary stretching of space, and the transformation of light into matter all serves to corroborate Yahweh's testimony. The Big Bang Theory requires, and our observations confirm, that all of these things actually occurred during the cosmos' birth. It is why Bereshith, Genesis 1-2, says that the Ruach, spirit of Elohim, God Almighty, was Pene present, Rakoth, hovering over and expanding the Tohu, Bohu, and Chosek, the lifeless, formless, void of darkness, prior to the existence of visible light. And especially notable in this context is that one of Rakoth's most prevalent connotations is agitation and rapid movement, making everything God said thus far consistent with the evidence. The second conclusion should now be intuitive. Based upon our analysis of the cosmic clock, Yahweh's claim that the first universal epoch lasted one day is not in conflict with the scientific assertion that it required 7 to 8 billion years. In support of this conclusion, consider the fact that while the various scientific methods for estimating the age of our universe provide differing conclusions, they all fall within the same general magnitude. So while we cannot be dogmatic or assert that the scientific claims are precise, based upon our ability to measure it, looking back in time from the vantage point of the Earth, the universe can be said to be approximately 14 to 15 billion years old, plus or minus a billion years or so. You know, it reminds me of the science does with their new toy, the Wilkinson's probe, of somebody that has one watch, and you ask them what time it is, and they'll say it's, you know, 9:52 and 35 seconds. Now, if that same person had three different watches, which showed three different times, but all, you know, 9:45 to 10 o'clock, and you ask them what time it is, they would say, well, it's approximately 9:50. And the same thing really should be true of science. They have multiple methods of determining the universe's age, some of which conclude 15 billion years, some conclude 16 billion years, and others suggest just shy of 14 billion years. They really ought to say that the universe is approximately 15 billion years old. That is if the speed of light has been a constant. And that is also only true measuring from the aftermath of the Big Bang, not trying to measure before it, because we have no way to measure before it. And it took some time for the energy that was put into the universe to actually bang. Now, these things are known. The creative days of Bereshith, which means in the beginning, changed by clerics to Genesis because of their preference for Greek over Hebrew. The days that are presented in the Torah, they look forward. They do not look back. Now, that's a very interesting perspective. But now, again, we're looking, when we try to understand the creation of our universe and the life within it, our perspective is looking back in time. But the testimony presented in Bereshith does not look back in time. It looks forward in time. And so understanding that perspective is also important to understanding the testimony. Yahweh's presentation was composed as an eyewitness. It's from the perspective of the Creator at creation, not from that of us on earth. The simple truth is that no matter how arrogant and how self-reliant mankind chooses to be, our planet didn't exist when the universe was formed. So our perspective, and therefore our reference on time, could not have been used. Now, with that in mind, let's compare our clock to Yahweh's. To do that, we must multiply the 15 billion year estimate of the collective age of the universe from the various aspects of science by 365.25 days per year, so that both clocks conform to the same unit of measure, that being days. 15 billion years times 365.25 days per year, well, equals a very big number. I'll read it to you, but it's this is probably trillion, 478 billion, 750 million days. So 5 trillion, 478 billion, 750 million days. Now, again, plus or minus 10%. To coordinate this 5.5 trillion day period with creation's clock, respecting the relativistic nature of time, we must divide this number of Earth days since creation by the coefficient that was of time that revealed how much slower time moved in the presence of the amount of energy at the universe's inception. Therefore, we deduced this number, and that is the number we deduced in our earlier discussions, that that Big Bang time ran at 0.9 times 10 to the 12th times slower than Earth time does today. So when we return to Shattering Myths, I'm going to share the math with you to understand how just shy of 5.5 trillion days, calibrated using the cosmic microwave background radiation and the other methods of expressing the time clock at creation, yields a number that should surprise you. I'm Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Yeah, that was it. Hello, and welcome back to the final scripture section, if you will, of Yada Yada this morning. I know this has been a lot of science here on Shattering Myths, but there is a purpose to it. Here is the concluding calculation. So, science tells us that the universe is approximately 5.5 trillion days old. That's, you know, in the range of 15 billion years, plus or minus 10%, with years calibrated into days so that our unit of measure is the same. So it's 5.5 trillion days is equivalent to about 15 billion years. Now, we know that a clock at creation ran at 0.9 times 10 to the 12th slower because of the cosmic microwave radiation that has been detected coming from the Big Bang. That's 900 billion times slower than a Earth clock moves today. So here's the math. 5 trillion, 478 billion, 750 million days, plus or minus 10%, divided by 900 billion equals 6 days. From the vantage point of a witness to creation, existing at the point of the inception of the universe, the whole process from start to finish took a length of time that equates to 6 days. Six 24-hour Earth days. And thus the heavens and earth were finished, and on the seventh day God ended his work which he had made. Bar-Rishith in the beginning, Genesis 2:1. God said that from his perspective, as the creator, it took 6 days to create the universe. A universe that is 5.5 trillion days old, measured by the time that would have been observed at creation, is exactly 6 days old. Now, if 5.5 trillion days divided by the cosmic microwave radiation evidence of the flow of time at creation, equaling exactly the amount of time that God told us over 3,500 years ago that it took to conceive the universe, if that number being precise doesn't get your attention, doesn't say, hey, you know, that's probably not a coincidence. Not 6 as a percentage of 5.5 trillion, probably not a coincidence. Yah's timeline, his accounting, God's 3,400 to 500-year-old written testimony, corresponds precisely with the evidence at our disposal. As I said, if that doesn't get your attention and cause you to begin to view his Torah testimony as being inspired and true, not much will. But we've only scratched the surface on this. With every layer and detail God adds, he provides what he knew about the universe and how it was created, when it was created, how and when life came to exist. And he does so accurately because not only was he there, he was responsible. This then compels a singular, informed, and rational conclusion. In the beginning, God created the spiritual world and the material realm. And he did so in 6 days. The energy Yahweh put into his creation was perfectly calculated to produce a universe hospitable to humankind. By design, the resulting system required just 6 days to conceive from his perspective, and yet it established the environment necessary for human history to unfurl over the course of precisely 6,000 years. And man was conceived, according to his testimony, on the 6th day. I'm noticing another trend. How about you? The reason for the common denominator here, 6, is because the redemptive story embedded in the future history of humankind and the creation account itself are both based on the same formula. 6 is the number of man who was created on the 6th day. 1 is the number of God, who repeatedly tells us that he is one. Bring them together, add them together, and you have perfection, also known as a reconciled relationship. This is the story of our Genesis.
I had tried everything. I'd cut back the amount of food I was eating. I was lifting weights and jogging, but nothing was working. My body was literally starving for minerals and